Hello, this is Matthew Tombers, and you're listening to WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And do you know tomorrow is your last day to vote in the special congressional election and in a myriad of Democratic primary elections around the region? So get out there and vote tomorrow if you haven't voted yet. Otherwise, on the WGXC Morning today, we'll hear from Ronnie Mintor, a formerly incarcerated individual who lives in Albany now as the co-founder of the Freedom Unshackled Coalition. And he'll tell us about New York rules that are no longer letting people send prisoners care packages from home. They have to buy items sent to prisoners from certain vendors now, and they're much more expensive. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
American jazz legend Joe Morris is coming to Opus 40 Sunday, August 28th, performing there in Saugerties from 3 to 5 p.m. with Brandon Lopez also on the bill. Joe Morris is a renowned American jazz guitarist based in New York City. This is a rare chance for local audience to see him Sunday, August 28th at Opus 40 in Saugerties from 3 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Where you can add your own events to have them read on the radio by pressing the Add an Event button, WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. The Daily Freeman reports that more than $28 million in federal funds have been secured by New York senior senator Chuck Schumer in an effort to overhaul the Rhinecliff train station. Democrat Schumer announced the $28,222,897 award in a press release on August 22nd. The federal dollars will support the state's work in overhauling the train station that has been in severe disrepair for more than 15 years. The funds are needed to pay for federally mandated Americans with Disabilities Act compliant, quote, infrastructure upgrades and modernizations the station required for its hundreds of thousands of commuters each year, unquote, according to the news release. The planned work will replace the existing 520-foot-long low-level platform with a new, longer and safer high-level platform, along with other much-needed infrastructure and accessibility upgrades. The money will also be used to complete related track and signal work and for stairs, elevators, and a pedestrian bridge. Quote, it is my pleasure to say to the commuters of the Hudson Valley that over $28 million in federal funding will now give Rhinecliff the infrastructure and accessibility upgrades it has desperately needed, unquote, Schumer said. Rhinebeck Town Supervisor Elizabeth Spinzia said, quote, this $28 million federal investment shows that our years-long effort to have paid off and will assist New York State and Amtrak in its design and construction work to upgrade the platform and make it more accessible for our residents, unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Roger Hannigan Gilson is reporting in the Times Union about how Hudson is dealing with the affordable housing crisis by regulating new hotels in the city. A lack of hotel rooms in the Hudson Valley is one of the economic forces driving the high cost of housing as individuals capitalize on the need for short-term rentals by converting apartments that would usually be rented to residents into places for tourists to stay. So if there are more hotel rooms available, there would be less demand for short-term rentals. But after Hudson's Industrial Development Agency began handing out tax breaks to new hotels, some residents became concerned. Hudson First Ward Supervisor Claire Cousins said, and I quote, when people come in and ask for tax breaks and they're creating things like hotels, there should be some benefit that the community is actually asking for, and that should be a solidified part of the process, end quote. Cousins is a spokesperson for the Hudson Community Benefits Alliance, a group of concerned neighbors and city residents. The group pressured the Hudson IDA to impose a moratorium on tax breaks for new hotels so it could reconsider the requirements for getting the abatements. In the past 2 years, the Hudson IDA has given tax breaks for 4 new building projects, with another held up by the moratorium. And the tax breaks given to those projects are far more generous than those given to other nearby projects. The Hudson IDA gave out tax breaks between 5% and 9% when compared to the project's total cost. But the City of Albany IDA gave the average project a 1.3% tax break in 2020. Schenectady was at 0.7%. Cousins hopes things at the Hudson IDA change. Cousins said, and I quote, hopefully you get people who we can trust that are going to do the right thing, that have good intentions, and would love to make the community happy. But unfortunately, we're talking about money in people's pockets and the city of Hudson and how intriguing it is, so you can't trust that, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that Columbia Green Community College's proposed 2022-2023 budget has now been approved by the Columbia County Board of Supervisors and the Green County Legislature. Elected officials in both counties have given the green light to their respective portions of the $19,128,307 spending plan. Columbia County will contribute $3.55 million, an increase of $206,333 over the previous year, while Green will pay $290 million, a decrease of $206,333 from its 2021-22 contribution. The Green County Legislature unanimously adopted the budget on August 17th, a week after the Columbia County Board voted its approval on August 10th. Quote, we like the fact of having a community college in our community because it provides a valuable service to our youth and adults who want to further their careers, unquote, Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell said. Greene County Administrator Sean Grodin said the county considers it a priority to invest in the county's shared college. Quote, it's a partnership because we're two of the few counties that share a community college, unquote, he said. Quote, the ability to provide higher education to our students as they graduate from high school or to in-service people is vital, unquote. The spending plan reflects a 10% increase in overall spending and an increase in tuition from $2,484 to $2,556 per semester for in-state residents enrolled as full-time students. The two-year college is supported by tuition, state aid, support from both Greene and Columbia counties, and this year just under $1.5 million from the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, part of the federal CARES Act. Quote, Columbia Greene extends deep gratitude for the steadfast financial support received from Columbia and Greene counties, unquote, Columbia Greene Community College President Carly Drummer said in a statement last week. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup that another Greene County resident has died of COVID-19. Officials did not give out any information about the death other than that it brings the county total to 134 deaths from the virus. Greene County Public Health Deputy Director Laura Churchill said, and I quote, the Public Health Department emphasizes the need to continue to practice protective measures, including hand washing, distancing, monitoring for symptoms, and testing and isolating if positive. Vaccine is available in many pharmacies throughout the county, and the New York State Department of Health is working with the schools to provide on-site vaccine clinics as the school year rolls out, end quote. On August 19th, Greene County officials announced 14 new cases of COVID-19, with a total of 68 county residents positive. Many more are probably positive, as home testing is now widespread. Read the full story in Porcupine Soup.
Lauren Harkawick is reporting for the Times Union that the Cary Institute, a local nonprofit environmental organization, has asked Congress for a hearing on why the government's current practices for limiting invasive pests are not working. Invasive pests such as the emerald ash borer and Asian longhorn beetle pose irreversible threats to the state's forest ecosystems by targeting native trees and, in some cases, threatening to wipe them out for good. Pests primarily enter the country through packaging used in international trade, is, quote, one of the most severe and urgent threats facing U.S. trees, unquote, according to the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies based in Millbrook in Dutchess County. In July, the Institute delivered a petition of more than 1,700 signatures to the U.S. House and Senate Agricultural Committees requesting a congressional hearing on invasive forest pests. Cary's Dr. Gray Lovett said last week that he wants Congress to investigate what is currently being done and why government agencies' current practices for keeping invasive pests out are not working. Asked why he thinks current practices are not working, Lovett said the government is not being firm enough in its regulatory standards for international trade. International trade is how most invasive pests get into the country, although through wooden packaging such as wood pallets. Pests like emerald ash borer and hemlock woolly aglid could dramatically change the forest landscape of the Northeast, and New York is the hardest hit in the country. Emerging major concerns, Lovett said, are the spotted lanternfly, which attacks grapes and apples, and the Asian longhorn beetle, which attacks maples. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Maura Rosner reports for Columbia Greene Media that Athens held a joint meeting between officials from both the town and the village to discuss the fate of the Athens Community Center, and only one town official turned out. Athens Town Supervisor Michael Perrone was the lone town official at the August 17th meeting. Before the meeting, town board members Shannon Spinner, Mary Brandow, Anthony Pollich, and Michael Regani sent emails to Perrone asking that bookkeeper Don Pereiro attend the meeting to be at the executive session portion. Perrone ignored those emails and attended the meeting. Perrone said Friday, and I quote, the village board was disappointed, as was the public. We think of the village and town of Athens working together as one town, one unit, end quote. Board members were emailed copies of the transcript of the meeting. Perrone said, and I quote, I also sent the 2007 and 2020 Athens comprehensive plan. There was no response or reaction from board members, end quote. Town board members refused to comment on their absences. Town council person Michael Regani said, and I quote, asked the supervisor why I did not attend, end quote. Athens Village officials were not happy. Athens Village trustee Joshua Lipsman said, and I quote, the village board was pleased to have the town supervisor. However, we felt it would have been a lot richer if the board members did attend. 20 to 25 members of the public came, which is larger than usual. Clearly, the public is interested in the cooperation of the village and town boards, end quote. Athens town officials and members of the public can attend a second joint meeting on the issue at 6:30 p.m. October 19th. And you can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Well, on Tuesday, a chance of showers before noon, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms between noon and 4 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 80 degrees. Tuesday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely before 8 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 63 degrees. And on Wednesday, sunny with a high near 84 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 61 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tuesday, August 23rd is the final day of voting in local elections, and we'll hear election coverage on the air at WGXC, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear excerpts of a recent debate between the two Democrats vying for the 20th Congressional District, incumbent Paul Tonko and challenger Radoslav Rahr. At 10 a.m., we'll head to Catskill and hear from the Forgotten Geek, Corey McCasland, in his show about 80s music and entertainment news. Early electro mix is on at 11 a.m. with tracks this week from Elaine Radigou, Michelle Chion, and Ilhan Minoglu. At noon, it's time for Rob Saffer's Overlook Show, and he's listening in with some jazz cellists this week. At 2 p.m., we have a special two-hour visit from France from folks from the APO33 group and Electro Pixel 12. They're presenting the Horsespiel Machine on the radio live from Acre. 7 p.m., it's time to dim the lights with Jenny and Amanda, and this week, revenge is on their minds. And then Neva Wartell has Music for the Masses with African Soul Power at 8 p.m. Dan Seward is live with the Battlefield Earth program at 10 p.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
New WGXC programmer Matthew O'Neill has a record release show at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on September 3rd at 8 p.m. His new album is called Connection. On the bill of the record release show is Morgan O'Kane opening and Otto Hauser playing DJ during the show. Again, that's Saturday, September 3rd at 8 to 11 p.m. at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. And there'll also be a live WGXC.org web stream and a broadcast on 90.7 FM. So turn out or tune in for the Matthew O'Neill record release show, Saturday, September 3rd at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill.
Hi, this is Michael Wilde inviting you to Mostly Singles, and if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time. And a podcast, too. Go to WGXC.org. Mostly singles every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, August 23rd. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Durham to 68 in Kingston. Regional average soil temperature is 69 degrees. Okay, let's cheer on the puddles as we hope for more rain today. A couple little passing showers this morning will give way to serious rain chances this afternoon. It could still be patchy and we're rolling the dice, but odds are still better off today than yesterday of a good afternoon storm. A high of 81 happens at 2 p.m. Rain stops a little after dark and we see a low of 64 degrees. Tomorrow it's dry again with a high of 86. A bit sticky with dew points in the mid-60s. For those of you desperate enough for it, that means any object outside, the bigger the better, will generate dew in the early morning. And that can actually be significant. Another night in the mid-60s takes us into, yep, another dry Thursday with a high of 90 degrees. Friday threatens to drop a little rain and have a high of 88 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:51 a.m., low tide at 7:40 a.m., high tide again at 1:28 p.m., and low tide once again at 7:33 p.m. Today's tidal strength is average. Today's river temperature will be 79 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:32 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:08 a.m. Looking way up, we see solar flare alerts are up with a massive sunspot taking aim directly at our rock. Solar wind speed is currently 478.5 kilometers per second at 6.02 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 15 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board, with good conditions below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 44, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the McPees of East Hampton, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Rob Sacco, host of Overlooked, WGXC's excursion into underheard and overlooked music. Overlooked is now on fourth Tuesday of each month from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Each show is themed, connecting disparate types of music in new and uncharted ways. That's Overlooked, 12 to 2 on Tuesdays.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up and didn't know where he was.
Thank you. Matthew Shipp on piano, Michael Bizio on bass, and Newman Taylor Baker on drums. This is the Matthew Shipp Trio from their 2022 album World Construct. This is Beyond Understanding.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have no chance at winning elections if we are in a position where our party has abandoned principle and abandoned value and abandoned fundamental fidelity to the Constitution in order to embrace a cult of personality.
Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney says a new political action committee will help elect Republicans who oppose former President Donald Trump and his lies about the 2020 election. But others in the party, like Kentucky Representative Andy Barr, argue Cheney's primary defeat is evidence voters are more concerned about the economy than the former president.
Real wages are down. Credit card debt is up because people cannot afford this increased cost of living.
A federal appeals court says for now, Republican South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham doesn't have to testify about Trump trying to overturn the 2020 presidential election results in Georgia. Meanwhile, a new NBC News poll finds nearly 60% of voters want investigations into Trump's election interference to continue. Among Republicans, the number is about 20%, compared with over 90% of Democrats and 60% of independents. In a Sunday phone call, President Biden discussed risk to a Ukrainian nuclear power plant with European leaders. The daughter of far-right Russian nationalist writer Alexander Dugin was killed Saturday when the car she was driving exploded near Moscow. Russian authorities called it a terrorist attack. Her father was the likely target of the bomb set in the car he owned. Education Secretary Miguel Cardone on Sunday said the Biden administration will make an announcement soon on extending a hold on student loan repayments.
We know August 31st is a date that many people are waiting to hear something from. We've been talking daily about this, and I can tell you that American people will hear within the next week or so.
Possible presidential contender Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is campaigning for Republican candidates in other states, as well as his own reelection.
We're out there making things happen, and obviously the state has responded very positively, and we've done really well under my tenure.
While talking up Ohio Senate candidate J.D. Vance and far-right Pennsylvania governor nominee Doug Mastriano, DeSantis criticized the additional $80 billion in IRS funding in the Inflation Reduction Act. Defenders say that's aimed at wealthy tax cheats and corporations. But Aaron Wythe of the Freedom Foundation argues it will hurt average income folks.
These 87,000 new agents, they're not going to be going after 100% of the higher income earners. They're going to be going after everyday Americans as well.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Over the last 18 months, Arizona GOP legislators passed 2 restrictive voting bills, one targeted at Native Americans, requiring proof of citizenship to vote by already registered voters. The other is a vague bill tightening vote-by-mail rules. Last week, Arizona hit the trifecta. The state was sued by the U.S. Justice Department, voting rights groups, and the Democratic Party all in one day. The first is SB 1260, allowing a clerk to take someone off the vote-by-mail list if he or she thinks the voter has moved to another county, but it creates no mandate to follow up. It also prohibits the forwarding of a mail ballot. Sending a ballot to an Arizona-registered son or daughter at college could be a felony. Advocacy group Voto Latino also cites voters with unstable housing and retirees who may spend part of the year in other states. Voto Latino and other groups are attempting to get the law struck down because of its vague provisions and burdensome barriers to voting. Arizona's HB 2492 targets a federal election-only ballot, which is an option in Arizona. Many Native Americans who voted for years using the ballot would not be able to because they don't have the citizenship documents. Two suits, one by the U.S. Justice Department and another by Democratic groups, argue that HB 2492 puts an undue burden on the right to vote, violating the First and 14th Amendments. See links to articles and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
You're tuned into the radio, WGXC, and this is 2022 New Music, collaboration between Stereolab and Nurse with Wound. It's called Simple Headphone Mind, on the radio at WGXC.org.
Simple headphone.
2022 new music from Stereolab and Nurse with Wound. Why? Simple Headphone Mind.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Ronnie Minter, who is one of the founders of the Freedom of Unshackled Coalition and Sisters Healing Old Wounds, and also been active with Vocal New York and the Capital District Chapter of the Poor People's Campaign, and undoubtedly a couple others. But we've asked Ronnie, she's agreed to come on to talk about the issue that the New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision has recently ruled that inmates in the state prisons cannot get care packages from family members, not only from in the mail, but even from in-person visits. So Ronnie, you know, how do families feel about this new restriction?
Well, I can tell you that when this was first announced as a pilot, I was contacted by quite a number of the women that I'm in contact with who were in Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, and they had a lot of concerns. I can tell you, as a formerly incarcerated individual, this would have definitely been problematic for me and a lot of the people that I knew of, and it's problematic now. There's unconventional means, which are illegal, of ways people gather the 30 pounds that are allowed per month to send to their family members. Some have different families buying different things so they can put together the package to send or bring. Others might, okay, I can get $10 now, I can get $15 now, and they shop according to where the prices are best for them, because a lot of families are low-income families, and it's hard for them to pay higher prices for some of these packages. And so this is definitely going to be a strain on a lot of families.
Now, what the Department of Corrections is saying, well, we got to do this and to, you know, cut down on contraband coming into the prison. Do you think this is the best way to deal with that issue?
No. Because here's the reality. As a formerly incarcerated person who absolutely knows how the contraband really gets into the jails and in the prisons, is by the correctional officers or the correctional staff. It's not coming through the mailroom. It's absolutely not coming through the mailroom. I drank more whiskey while I was in Groveland Correctional Facility in 1990 through 1994, and it did not come through the package room. I got it directly from the officers. So for them to sit there and say this is to stop the contraband, that this is absolutely not going to stop the contraband. Officers bring that stuff in, and so do the civilian workers.
Now, as you mentioned previously, I assume, you know, people in prison really look forward to, you know, receiving packages from the family members, both for the goods that come, but also just as a way to connect with families. So I imagine the inmates, incarcerated individuals, are not very happy.
Absolutely not, because this is now going to put, like I said, sometimes getting these packages together are family effort, like all the family members come in together. I can get this, I can get that. Or sometimes they even go to pantries. They even go to pantries to get some of this stuff. Or they, you know, or church members help them collect some of the stuff, the items that go into the packages. They don't just, these most individuals don't just have the money to order. And some people are relying on older family members that might not know how to manipulate certain forms and websites to order these foods. So you're really asking a lot of families to do. This was an unfair thing to do. And I don't understand why the Department of Corrections did not take into account the hardship they're putting on the families and those incarcerated individuals. It's because this is a money business. And obviously these contracts are yielding money, and this is what they do. always.
Well, the cynic in me might also suggest that it's election time. Even the more moderate politicians on the Democratic side have a tendency to want to show a little toughness when it comes to criminal justice reform. But what are the possibilities of getting the governor to agree to overturn this rule?
Slim to none. I believe it's slim to none. I think once things like this are done, the only thing that I can see overturned, that I saw overturned rather, was when they tried to institute the no cigarette ban. I was there in Albion Correctional Facility, I want to say around 2000, when they tried to stop people from smoking inside the facilities. They was going to stop that. It didn't go over well at all. But it did not become like law, so to speak. It was talked about. They were doing these different phases, but it never became, you know, a written regulation or whatever. But that was the only thing that I saw that was talked about and discussed, but never happened. This has happened. They said it was just going to be a pilot. I think Albion Correctional Facility and two other facilities, that's a female facility, and two other facilities were the pilot. And then next thing you know, it just happened.
Now, what are some of the other, I guess, changes that Freedom Unshackled and other groups you're working with would like to see, and you know, how we treat individuals who are incarcerated?
Well, one thing that would help, which is tied into this, is Freedom Unshackled. We are tackling the wages that incarcerated individuals get. I'm actually sitting here right now with the corrections and community supervision wage document that we had to send for. And we're going over it piece by piece because you want to institute this horrific regulation and force people to order from vendors, yet you're paying the men and women 14 cents up to 27, maybe sometimes 33 cents an hour for various jobs throughout the facility, various programs they call it, throughout the facility, and now saying that they have to now get their stuff from these vendors. And this across the board, this isn't fair. They need to raise the wages, number one, and that's something Freedom and Shackle is definitely talking to our politicians, our legislators about, raising the wage that men and women who are incarcerated receive. It's unfair that men and women, well, I'm not sure if the women are still doing it, but the men definitely working for DMV. If you call DMV, the first voice you hear is somebody who's incarcerated, the first live voice you hear. But upon release, those same individuals have barriers to becoming employed at the DMV. But they're not getting paid nowhere near what somebody out here is getting paid at the DMV. They're getting a dollar, if that, per hour. Yeah, so where's the fairness in that?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I often remind people that when the Constitution was amended to abolish slavery back after the Civil War, the one group they expressly exempted, unfortunately, were prisoners.
Absolutely. That's definitely still in the 13th Amendment, which brings us to another topic. If anyone's ever heard of Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, this is definitely what's happening in the correctional systems.
I used to work with welfare participants, and I know that the work they did for welfare did not count, say, when they were applying for a county or state job as job experience. Is that also true with people doing work within the prisons, that when they go to apply a job?
Sometimes you can find a unique situation where they will take into account the work that you did while you were incarcerated. I was very lucky that I transitioned into the HIV field, and I was a peer educator for HIV and STDs while I was incarcerated. But at the same token, I had a civilian worker who was more than willing to write reference letters to show the work that I had done for 2-3 years. So it happens sometimes, but far and few between.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Ronnie Minter, along with the Freedom Unshackled Coalition and Sisters Healing Old Wounds, as well as Welcome to New York and the Capital District Chapter of Poor People's Campaign. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.